On this episode of Skeptico,
if you get the big picture stuff wrong, you can't get a lot of stuff right. The scientific paradigm that we live in tells us that we are biological robots, that we are purely a product of our brain, that there is no us in there. There is no reality to our experience. And that filters down, like you're saying, into a medical profession that really does not want to hear about experience.
The interesting thing is you realize how conditioned the world is in terms of the scientific worldview. So yes, patients come to me thinking that they have to lay out their problems to me in scientific terms. And so they'll start to give me a scientific medical explanation about what they have. And I'll stop them and I'll say, no, please just tell me what's bothering you. Let me know what your experience is. And some of them look at me like I'm crazy, as if to say, well, don't you understand what arthritis is? You know, and I'll say, yes, of course I understand what arthritis is, but I want you to tell me about your experience with this so-called arthritis, this label that we've given it, this box we've stuck it into.
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, thinkers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris, and on this episode of Skeptico, homeopathy. But really more than that, because what attracted me to our guest today, Dr. Larry Malerba, who I have to thank Bernardo Kastrup for pointing me to, and by the way, as an aside, Bernardo has a new book out, and he's going to be joining me to talk about it on Skeptico in a couple months, so please look forward to that. But anyways, what I think is intriguing about Dr. Malerba's ideas and his approach is his willingness to step back and say, okay, if scientific materialism, mind equals brain, biological robot stuff that I always talk about, if that's wrong, and I think we've demonstrated that it's provably, scientifically, by experimentation, by demonstration, wrong, then what are the impacts of that if we're holding on to it in this field like in medicine? And I think that's one of the topics we try and approach in this interview. We also talk about whether or not homeopathy has its own limits because it's kind of played into the conventional materialistic science scheme that it is become a part of because it's medicine. And that's a really interesting subject that we kind of unravel but don't get into all the way. Maybe we can talk about that after the show. And then finally, we even talk about the CDC, the Center for Disease Control here in the U.S., and their recent admission, very strange contorted admission, that there is in fact a link between vaccines and autism, and why we shouldn't be surprised, number one, that those kind of links exist and that we've built a machine that can never come clean about talking about those things. And if this is news to you, which I'm sure it will be for many of you, you can ask yourself the question, why didn't you know about this? Why isn't it headline news day after day in the mainstream media? But dig a little bit after this show and you'll find out that it is in fact true, that you can go listen to the actual recordings of the whistleblower from the CDC, and you can read the veiled admission by the CDC online. That is in some ways tangential to this interesting dialogue I had with Dr. Larry Malerba, but in a lot of ways, maybe it isn't. In any case, it was great having him on. It's a topic that I haven't really delved into much at all, but it was really great, especially since I've always kind of bashed homeopathy in the past, and I love growing and expanding, and this interview kind of took me in a different direction, so I'm very appreciative for that, and I hope you enjoy it as well. Here's my interview with Dr. Larry Malerba. Today, we welcome Dr. Larry Malerba to Skeptico. Larry is a homeopathic doctor, and I have to put a full stop there. It's quite, as many of us, including myself, know, that term in and of itself is highly controversial. Don't worry, we're going to talk a lot about that and what that means, why it is such a hot button issue, and how that relates to his work in particular, because I think it's very interesting. But we're going to move way beyond that, because Larry is also someone who has this tagline that I think fits right into what we do here at Skeptico. His tagline is building bridges between holistic healing, conventional medicine, and spirituality. So that's going to be interesting to dig into. I should mention that he is the author of two books, at least. I think there's more, but Metaphysics and Medicine, Restoring Freedom of Thought to the Art and Science of Healing, and Green Medicine, Challenging the Assumptions of Conventional Healthcare. Larry, it's great to have you on Skeptico. Thanks so much for joining me.
Hi, Alex. Good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, for this interview, I mentioned in a previous episode of Skeptico that I'm moving towards this thing of called, like, I'm calling it Skeptico 3.0, where we do this like online forum exchange between the guest and our audience. And we did that for this interview we're having right now. And I was really very pleased with the way that it came out, because I have to tell you, I have to admit, this kind of knee-jerk, skeptical idea of homeopathic medicine. And I think that some of the things that came up in your exchange with me, as well as some of our forum members, it really helped me see beyond that and see in broader terms what you're really talking about here. But I want you to tell folks a little bit about your kind of philosophical position of merging these things, that is conventional medicine and more holistic medicine, and how you see homeopathic medicine fitting in that kind of landscape.
Sure. Well, my conventional medical training was exactly that. It was conventional. It was osteopathic training. I went to osteopathic medical school. And I also, at the same time, studied homeopathy, because I had the unique opportunity to learn homeopathy with a family practice physician who was practicing in one of the medical school clinics. And people would come to him, and he would ask them if what they would prefer. And if they wanted conventional medicine, he'd give them that. And if they wanted homeopathic treatment, he'd offer that to them. So I kind of had this interesting way of learning the two systems of medicine side by side, and that from day one has informed my philosophical views, which I have laid out in my books. And the bottom line, the message that I am trying to bring across, is that conventional science and conventional medicine have their distinct limitations, and they tend to often overstep their bounds, oftentimes not knowing that they're doing it or not understanding why or how they're doing it. And that perspective I have learned from practicing my own alternative form of medicine. So from practicing homeopathy, I see the flaws of conventional medicine, and I see where it has gotten it wrong. And another sort of idea is that conventional medicine and conventional science tend to have this attitude increasingly in our time that science is science and therefore it's correct because it's science, not understanding that there are a whole slew of metaphysical / philosophical beliefs that underpin that science. Now, they would disagree with that, and a lot of them would say, no, it's scientific. It has nothing to do with metaphysics. And yet I say it has everything to do with your worldview. Your worldview will determine the type of medicine that you practice or the type of medicine that you seek out, and it makes a big difference. And that's kind of the bottom line messages that I'm trying to educate the public about regarding the differences between conventional medicine and alternative forms of medicine and homeopathy and so on.
The phrase that kept coming up for me as I was reading this is, you're calling bullshit on materialistic science. And what flows from that, you're saying, is fundamentally flawed. So what I see is a big compared to what, right? So if you want to attack homeopathic medicine, if you want to attack conventional medicine, I think what I hear you saying is, okay, compared to what? Compared to a mainstream science as we know it model that says that everything is reducible to matter, which we know is wrong, that says that consciousness is an illusion, which is falsifiable from a number of respects, and therefore takes all this mind-brain interaction completely off the table. So that's what I read in your work, is someone who's just stepping back and going, wait a minute, you know, you guys are attacking this kind of medicine, this kind of worldview, when your worldview has been so decimated by the best scientific evidence that you have a non-starter as a paradigm. At least the paradigm that we're starting with is closer to the reality that we're discovering. So shouldn't that be the appropriate starting point? That's what I hear you saying. Do you have any thoughts on that? Am I missing it? Are we in sync there?
No, absolutely. You're right on. You know, I'm not anti-science, and I'm sure you aren't either. The point is, it depends how you define science, and that's open to interpretation. Science, to me, as it was originally conceived, was simply a method or a tool to learn about the world around us. But over the course of time, it has evolved now into our modern materialist science, which has a whole set of rules and stipulations about how it's practiced and what it can study and what it's all about. And it does not, at the same time, it does not acknowledge those limits. It simply says this is the best there is, and it won't acknowledge its own limitations.
So Larry, let me interject something. Give folks some specific examples of where that paradigm has consequences in terms of how people are diagnosed, treated, and the rest. How we can put a finger right on where that really doesn't make a lot of sense.
Sure. Well, there's a lot of ways that what I call, those isms of medicine, those sort of fundamentalist viewpoints that are too rigid to be willing to change, those isms inform the practice of medicine and wind up influencing the outcomes in medicine. So, for example, just on the most fundamental level, materialism, when science only chooses to study and acknowledge the reality of material existence, it leaves out the entire other half of existence, which is consciousness, which is thought, which is emotion, which is everything having to do with mind. And if there's anything that I've learned from practicing homeopathic medicine over these 25 years, it's that most illness, most physical illness has its origins in some sort of mental, emotional, spiritual trauma or misconception or issue or complex that feeds into and eventually generates physical symptomatology, right? So if you leave that out of your scientific equation, how the heck are you supposed to handle any kind of illness, right? So that's sort of the materialistic ism.
And on one hand, that's not that controversial. I mean, a lot of leading care or leading edge conventional hospitals will be caring for people in that way. Hell, the whole idea of psychology and psychiatry, incorporates that in. But I think what you point out in your book and in your writings is it's always done with this kind of backdoor hush-hush, don't call it that. Don't dare admit that we're treating the person holistically. We have to kind of cram it back into explaining it in these stupid terms that tie back to this paradigm that we have of materialism. Isn't that what's going on a lot of times?
Sure. And to me, again, I'm not my goal here isn't to tear apart medicine. It's to point out flaws so that it can improve, right? But conventional medicine's version of holism is rather facile. It's not, holism to me doesn't have to do with putting pretty curtains up and comfortable beds in your hospital room and having a nice bedside manner when you approach the patient. Those are nice things and they're wonderful, but that's not holistic medicine. And to me, that's where my homeopathic practice teaches me otherwise. When I know that in order to treat so-and-so's migraines, for example, I have to investigate the very nature of that person's psyche and the things that are floating around in their mind. So a person may tell me that they have a tendency to be jealous, they have a tendency to be sarcastic, and they have a distinct fear of snakes. Now, that sounds rather strange, but that is the exact, those are the clues I need to, in order to prescribe a very specific homeopathic substance that, if it fits, will very likely get rid of that person's migraines. Someone else may come along and say, yeah, I have migraines, and I have a tendency to be apathetic, and I can't get myself going, and my house is all cluttered, and I can't motivate to do the things I want to do, and I tend to be a bit of a know-it-all, and I get in arguments all the time. And I'm very warm-blooded, such that, you know, I throw the covers off at night because I'm too hot under the covers. And I also have itchy skin, and when I'm under the covers at night, my skin itches even more so. And that's the profile of a certain archetype, so to speak, or stereotype that points to a specific substance, a homeopathic substance, that if given to that person will help him overcome his migraines. And not only that, since it's holistic medicine, and since the goal is not just to treat the migraines, because that's what conventional medicine would do, it would give a pill specifically aimed at the migraines, the treatment is aimed at the whole person, and therefore the expectation would be that not only would his migraines get better, but he might come back and say, wow, I feel more motivated. I started to clean up my act. My itchy skin isn't bothering me as much. And I have a new perspective on life. And that, to me, is a genuinely holistic approach that takes into account the whole, right? And so, we, you know, there are sort of little clues, in, you know, in that medicine uses to realize that, help us realize that it's not as holistic as it's trying to be or appears to be. And you know, one of those things is that word pseudoscience that it throws around. To me, that's kind of a classic thing that everybody falls for. Pseudoscience is a term used by science, by conventional medical science, for anything that simply doesn't conform to its set of rules. You know, it's like a bunch of players on the field saying, you guys aren't playing by our rules, therefore you don't know how to play, right? And yet all of these different holistic alternatives have unique sets of rules that don't conform to the isms of medicine, to the materialism, to the reductionism, to rationalism, to empiricism, to objectivism, and so on, right?
Maybe. You know, that's where I think I'm not sure that I'm won over by the holistic treatments, the holistic medicines, if you will. Because, you know, when you push the issue like you did with those cases, and I'd like you to go through those cases and follow through and tell us how that works out and, you know, how you treat people. But to say, okay, that person needs to be looked at holistically. And we may maybe need to be open to other healing modalities, whether they be energy healing, whether they be some kind of therapy, whether they be some kind of group work. There's a whole smorgasbord of different possibilities that we can open ourselves up to if we say, hey, there's this consciousness element and we don't really know how to exactly affect it, but that is key to this overall health that we're trying to achieve for this person. So in that sense, I'm in total agreement with you that we have to be open and look at those things. I'm less convinced, and I'd like you to convince me, that we have good, solid evidence to tie any particular set of symptoms that you might diagnose to this specific little medicine that's going to be given. I mean, the paradox is, it sounds to me, again, so materialistic, you know? It's like, oh, you know, we're taking a holistic approach to diagnosis, but at the end of the day, the answer is medicine. It's just in this different form. What do you think about that?
I guess if you, for someone who doesn't understand homeopathy, it might appear that way because you're administering a pill. So therefore, someone assumes that's material medicine, right? But in reality, that's been the knock against homeopathy for since its inception 200 years ago, that the doses are so ridiculously small they can't possibly have any effect. So conventional pharmacology would dismiss it as ineffectual because the material doses can't possibly work. And homeopathy responds by saying, well, they do work. And then it speculates as to why they must work. And so we have a variety of speculative answers that help to try to explain why it works.
Isn't a lot of that just because you're on the other guy's playing field? I mean, you have to play by those rules to a certain extent because that's the way the game has been played out. I mean, if I walked into your office and you had a bunch of crystals around and at the end told me that the crystal energy had played a part in my healing, there might be a reality to that. I don't dismiss that. I don't know if that's true or not, but I don't think that would get you very far. In the same way, you know, we did a show on energy healing, and I went through an energy healing and reported on it on the show. I don't understand how energy healing interacts with consciousness, but it seemed to work in my case. So, again, I'm uncomfortable with the idea that we have to, in the process of being open to alternative medicine, have to, again, kind of play by the other guy's rule and say, and here's the answer. It's in this little bottle here. Take 7 drops in your water and you'll be good as rain. Is it not the interaction that they've had with you, somehow your consciousness affecting theirs or any other number of variables that we would have to be open to if we opened up to the reality of consciousness?
Sure, those would be factors, but that's not the primary factor in how homeopathy works, right? It's a factor just like anything else. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I don't really try to present it to people in scientific terms. I've gone way past that. I'm no longer interested in, you know, satisfying scientific demands for explanations because I'll waste the rest of my life trying to do that. Instead of moving along and continuing to treat people and learning through the lessons that I see and the interactions that occur in practicing my medicine. Now, homeopathy to me is an energy medicine because it does not work on a material level. It doesn't work on a biological or a chemical level. It works somehow on the level of spirit or physics or energy or whatever you want to call it. It doesn't matter to me how I explain it, really. It matters to my patients. My patients want to know, how is it possible that my migraines are gone after 10 years, you know? And so I can come up with a variety of explanations which sound logical, but it doesn't matter. To me, it's a phenomenological approach that I take that proves itself over and over and over again, and has proven itself over and over again to thousands of practitioners and millions of patients for 200 years. So to say, well, you know, what medicine then steps in and says, yeah, but how come you can't explain it? And I say, I don't know. I can't explain it. It doesn't matter to me that I can't explain it. What matters to me and should matter to you is that it works, and you should be curious enough to want to know about something that can actually help your patients, right? And so you bystep that step of having to explain, and in essence, that's what medicine is all about. That's the sort of irony of it all, right? Conventional medicine, because of the nature of its isms and the limitations of its approach, has very limited ability to treat illnesses. It has almost nothing to offer chronic illness. So most people who have chronic illnesses have to live with them for the rest of their lives. That's what chronic illness is, right? And that's because their worldview doesn't allow them to think outside that box and doesn't allow them to seek other approaches that could operate on a level beyond just the material, on a level of energy or on a level of physics or on a level of bioenergy or the life force or consciousness or mind-body or however you want to frame that or characterize that. All of these different approaches that are not necessarily materialistic are operating on some other level that have real life impact, right? And you know, another sort of revealing idea in conventional medicine is the idea of placebos. So to me, you know, a placebo in conventional parlance is an excuse to ignore the mind-body concept.
Right.
That's all it is. We're just taking it and sticking it in a box and calling it a placebo, which enables us to stick to our materialistic medicine. That's all it amounts to. And yet, that's really powerful, important stuff. And yes, my homeopathic interaction with my patients involves mind, and my demeanor and the way I approach them has some impact on their healing process. But if you were to observe the actual results and the problems that they start with and the problems that they end with and how long it takes to get over something like rheumatoid arthritis, some things that are so seemingly material or so densely ingrained in the person, and to see those things change, you realize that's way beyond a placebo effect. It's way beyond a routine mind-body effect. It's a more powerful phenomenon that can be harnessed, and that's really important to understand.
Yeah, I'm down with a lot of that. I'm just a little bit resistant to putting it back in the same box, you know, and that's what I see happening sometimes with homeopathic medicine, is that we can't deal with all the mystery. We can't deal with the mystery of placebo, energy healing, environmental subtle interactions. We roll all that together and we say, gee, we don't know. So we're going to put this little medicine here in a box because that's what people are comfortable with, and that's how we're going to interact with it. You know, a parallel to me, and this is maybe venturing into the spiritual realm in a sense, is that I've worked with mediums on the show, psychic mediums, and I've also worked with psychics in relative to psychic detective work, you know. And if you talk to those people, some of them have different methods, modalities of tapping into whatever that field is that is a reality. Like if you're a psychic detective and you can go out and find bodies like some of the ones I've talked to, hey, somehow there's a reality to what you do. So the question is, how do you do it? And you talk to some of them, they say, oh, I use tarot cards. You know, I use card reading. Well, what's there to card reading? And somebody else says, oh, I use psychopathy, where I take an object and that has certain energy and do it. And the more you talk to these people, what I realize is those are just vehicles. Those are just ways for them to tie into whatever this mystery is, but it isn't dependent on those tools. I mean, it might be for that individual person, but it doesn't really expose the underlying reality. And I'm with you. I don't think we have to know the underlying reality in order to use the tools. I just think we have to be a little bit careful about falling into the trap of putting so much attention on the tools instead of just focusing on the mystery, because that's what we're really talking about here.
I think I understand what you're saying. I'm not sure how you think homeopathy is in the same box. To me, there's no doubt that there are all sorts of psychic phenomena, and there are all sorts of individuals out there who have various talents and gifts, some of which are beyond the norm, and make use of those gifts through all sorts of means. And so there's nothing wrong with that. That's great stuff. But the nice thing about homeopathy is there's an actual sort of standardized methodology that anyone can use to get those sorts of results on a mind-body level. So it makes it very accessible. And it's not dismissing all of the various psychic phenomena or mind-body or consciousness-related issues. It acknowledges all that, but it also has its own methodology that it has to follow in order to be practiced effectively. And so, you know, in that sense, it is a science. You know, homeopathy to me is the science of similars. It's the science of using the energy of substances to treat illnesses that have similar energies, right? To me, the world is full of archetypal energies, and each substance manifests by expressing an archetypal energy, and the same applies to people's symptom patterns, and the complexes that they are subject to and get stuck in. They represent archetypal energies. And so when you bring together the archetypal energy of the person, of the symptom pattern of the person, with a substance that resonates, that vibrates at a similar frequency or a similar archetypal energy, then you get this rather remarkable response that has been observed over and over again. And when you see that, and that it then makes you reflect back upon the nature of things and say, okay, if this is true, it changes everything I think about medicine, right?
Yeah. You know, I don't know if you noticed, Larry, but when we opened up this discussion to the Skeptical Forum, one of the members, Bucky, who I'm not going to reveal his real name, but I know him. He's a really smart guy and has helped out on the show a couple of times. But he exposed me to some really rather amazing research being done in Italy, where a very high-profile conventional doctor is using low-dose medicine. Does that sound like a kind of reframe of homeopathic treatments? But he's using way, way lower than would be clinically shown to be efficacious doses of medicine on his cancer patients, and has achieved rather amazing results. Again, this is the conventional path, published in conventional journals and all that kind of stuff. Are you aware of this low-dose medicine trend in conventional medicine?
No, I'm not aware of it in any detail, but it's not surprising at all. And any homeopath would say, well, gee, that makes sense, because when you get down into those lower, truly low doses, it's not about dosing anymore. It's about energy. So when you don't have enough material substance to create some sort of physiological reaction or phenomena anymore, you're dealing on a different level. So perhaps that's what's happening, and it's not surprising. And medicine is famous for, taking things and making it its own and making it over into its own. The problem is usually when it does so, it's throwing out 200 years of history and experience and reinventing the wheel, when it has everything it needs to learn. In the case of low-dose medicine from homeopathy, it could learn all kinds of things that would corroborate perhaps the findings that they're getting. So it's not surprising at all. There's a whole science called hormesis. It's the same thing, you know, H-O-R-M-E-S-I-S, hormesis. There are journals of hormesis that talk about dose-dependent effects, you know, on and when certain drugs are used or in different dosages, you get completely different effects. When it's too high a dose, you can get a toxic effect. When it's just right, you get a conventional therapeutic effect. When it's very low dose, you get a stimulatory effect. That's what they refer to it as. It somehow stimulates something to happen, you know. And so homeopathy makes use of that stimulus response energy effect. So we use an energy to generate a response and sit back and watch the life force do its thing and follow it along and judge whether it's moving in a healthy direction or moving or not moving in a healthy direction or just remaining stuck where it is, right? So there's a whole ton of information that homeopathy could lend to something like low-dose medicine.
Larry, your book, let's talk about these, a couple of these books. First, Metaphysics and Medicine, Restoring Freedom of Thought to the Art and Science of Healing. What's that about?
Well, it's a lot of it is about what we've been talking about without the homeopathy. It's really several themes run throughout, one of which is the idea that these isms of medicine in essence result in a squelching of freedom of thought within medicine. If you can't think outside those rules, then how are we to come up with new ideas, find new ways of healing and treating people? So freedom of thought is limited by conventional medicine. It's all about the logic of medicine versus the reality of patients. So another one of those isms is rationalism. If to me, this is sort of the modern disease. We're such thinking beings that we're inclined to believe things that sound logical and that make logical sense to us, right? Rather than the reality of patients and their own experiences, and the net effect of these isms is to downplay and denigrate the experiential reality of patients and the validity of people's experiences. Science actually mistrusts experience almost as its baseline position. I don't trust your experience. That's why a doctor will say, after a patient explains something, a doctor at least may think to himself, well, that's just anecdote. That's an anecdotal story. Let's find out what the science says. We'll run the tests and do the x-rays, and then we'll get the real story, right? And so that plays itself out in reality in many ways, right? So you have sort of the logic of medicine says that depression is a chemical imbalance having something to do with, you know, neurons and neurochemicals and serotonin and so on. And the patient says, no, my depression has to do with the fact that I got fired from my job 2 months ago, right? Or the other patient says, no, my depression has to do with the fact that my grandmother died and she was my best friend in the whole world, right? And so I don't doubt that on the material level, you may find that the death of your grandmother or the loss of your job alters your brain chemistry in a certain way, but that doesn't mean the brain chemistry is the source or cause of your depression. It's simply an accompanying phenomenon that goes along with your depression on the material level, right? On another very simple level, you have sort of basic protocols, like when someone injures a body part, right, sprains an ankle, for example, automatically every doctor on the planet and every other ancillary health professional will say, put ice on it. You got to put ice on it, right? And what homeopathy teaches me is that that's not always true. And there are plenty of people out there who will say, I sprained my ankle and I attempted to put ice on it and it aggravated the heck out of it. But and so then I tried heat and it actually helped. And the same is true down the road. So it could be you know, it could be 3 months after I sprained my ankle still bothers me. It's still sore. It's still stiff. And a certain percentage of people will say that putting ice on it helps it feel better. And another percentage of people will say putting heat on it makes it feel better. So there are no rules. There are only individual realities of individual symptom patterns and individual patients. And that experiential reality that we should be listening to from our patients is what counts. Not to say that the logic of medicine doesn't have a role, right? Certainly it makes sense that medicine teaches us that if we rupture an artery and we need to go in there and cut you open and figure out how to sew it up and so on and so forth, in that sense, that logic makes sense. But many times, especially in terms of chronic illnesses, the logic of medicine doesn't make sense and often runs contrary to the experience of people.
Yeah, I wanted to touch on a couple of things there. First, the operative word to me in what you're talking about is freedom. You know, the freedom to explore the boundaries of what we know in terms of healing. And I think that anyone who just takes an honest look at medical science and the way it advances will see that there really isn't that freedom. I mean, these guys are in a box in terms of what they can research, what tests they can fund, and gosh darn it, they better get these results that are supported by our corporate sponsors or it just isn't going anywhere. That's just a reality. We've spoken about that many times on this show, and anyone who doesn't acknowledge that, I think, is just got their head in the sand. So there isn't that freedom to explore these other things. The other thing that I think is extremely profound about what you're saying, and it's, again, something we've talked about a lot, is that if you get the big picture stuff wrong, you can't get a lot of stuff right. And what you touched on about experience is, I think, fundamental to this because it relates to consciousness. The scientific paradigm that we live in tells us that we are biological robots, that we are purely a product of our brain, that there is no us in there. There is no reality to our experience. And that filters down, like you're saying, into a medical profession that really does not want to hear about experience. And then an insurance industry that certainly doesn't want to hear about it because they can't charge for it and they can't tie it back to a billable kind of item. So I think when we mess up the big stuff, and that's what first attracted me to your work, Larry, because it runs throughout. This theme runs throughout, and you do a wonderful job of exploring it both in green medicine and in metaphysics and medicine, is this idea that, you know, when you have a materialistic science that doesn't acknowledge even that there is a reality to experience. Get this, folks. I mean, it's hard to believe. You think this is kooky to say, but conventional science thinks that experience is an illusion, that there is no reality to it. It's just your brain firing off randomly, and you're thinking that that's a reality, but it's not really. Once you get that wrong, I think you're hamstrung from the beginning, and you wind up with all these weird things that I think you're talking about. I really like that part of what you're saying.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is you realize how conditioned the world is in terms of the scientific worldview. So yes. Patients come to me thinking that they have to lay out their problems to me in scientific terms. And so they'll start to give me a scientific medical explanation about what they have. Uh-huh. And I'll stop them and I'll say, no, please just tell me what's bothering you. Let me know what your experience is. And some of them look at me like I'm crazy, as if to say, well, don't you understand what arthritis is? You know, and I'll say, yes, of course I understand what arthritis is, but I want you to tell me about your experience with this so-called arthritis, this label that we've given it, this box we've stuck it into, you know. And so it's kind of funny. I have to educate patients in order to teach them how to learn, how to tune into their own experiences, because they've been so programmed not to pay attention to that. And in metaphysics and medicine, it's talking about how those isms of medicine prohibit the exploration or acceptance of experience, right? So if we're talking about materialism, well, nothing immaterial can be talked about. We're only going to talk about physical things, not immaterial experience. If we're talking about objectivism, then anything subjective is downplayed, excluded, or dismissed, and our own personal experiences are subjective, right? And if we're talking about dualism, well, that splits off mind from body and only focuses on body, leaving out mind and experience. And if we're talking about even empiricism, you know, to me, which is one of those sort of, it's a kind of confusing concept. Empiricism is a can of worms. It's you think empiricism means openness to experience and our observations, and yet science has reduced that with its reductionism to just the anatomical and physical and material aspects of observation and not our experiential observations or our observations of others' experiences. And so, you know, you can't win. It's a very rigid box that they've got themselves stuck into. They don't realize they're in it. They don't even understand it. They think that that's science, and they that's how they're trained, and that's what they do. But to me, there's a difference between science as it was originally conceived to be open-minded inquiry into the world, modern materialist science, which is stuck in its ways, which if it just simply stopped and said, okay, we acknowledge that these are the limitations of our science, then I'd have no problem with it. It would be perfectly fine.
Right.
All right, then go about and do your thing and acknowledge these are the rules, but also allow for other possibilities. And then you take it a step further and you have scientism, which is the whole crew out there who says that these isms of medicine and isms of science are the only way to go and nothing else is possible. And so those are the sort of fundamentalists who support fundamentalist science. So you can't even talk to those people because they can't think outside that box. It's a faith-based belief in science. And then to me, you have authentic science. And authentic science is open to everything. And I don't see why you can't study psychological, emotional, spiritual, paranormal phenomena with science. It makes no sense that you can't do that. I mean, of course you can do that. You just have to be open-minded enough to say, okay, we're going to observe a bunch of people, talk to them, learn about it, and learn as much as we can about these phenomena. And that's a science of the immaterial, right?
Right. Then again, maybe the reality is we're so far from that it might not even be productive to talk about. I mean, a couple of touch points I just threw on the table and get your thoughts on. One is the system, as we all know, the medical system is really broken in some fundamental ways that are just scary. You know, a lot of people, I'm sure, are aware of the CDC coming out recently, a whistleblower in the Center for Disease Control coming out and doing this expose on vaccines and say, hey, you know, I got to admit, Wakefield was right. We did see this link between autism and vaccines. We're afraid to talk about it. We're told not to talk about it. We're told to change the numbers, right? So, I mean, at one level, if you want to say, hey, maybe science can help us because the scientific method, pure science, can help us, we got some realities to deal with. The first is that reality, that there are forces, economic forces, power control forces that are going to drive the train off the rails. And then you have some other phenomena that we've kind of bumped into that we don't know what to do with that also inhibit pure science, if you will, medical science. One would be the experimenter effect. We know experimentally that we can control an experiment as tightly as we possibly can, and one experimenter will get one result, and another experimenter can get a different result. Well, right. So we can't separate that out. And then third, I'd like your thoughts on this, and maybe you saw this the other day, but it was actually a few years ago, but the decline effect. So now people that are really honestly looking at medical science are noticing that some of our treatments are declining, their efficacy is declining over the years, right? So we did these things 10 years ago, and hey, these blockers that for mild depression, you know, they work. 10 years later, you know what? They don't work the same way. Everything we try and do everything the same way. There is a decline effect. Maybe it has something to do with this, you know, 100th monkey group conscious. We don't know. So there's a number of ways that I would suggest that medical science isn't really repairable in the way that we're talking about here. And I'd love to get your thoughts on any one of those three, either the CDC and the corruption or the experimenter effect or the decline effect.
Okay. I don't disagree with all that you said. I don't know how to explain a decline effect. I think it makes sense, though, that human life evolves and changes and consciousness changes. And so
let me just interject something, Larry, because I had a guest on this show. He's been on the show several times. Dr. Rupert Sheldrick, he's a biologist, a Cambridge biologist, and he has this theory called morphic residence. So that you're familiar with it. But he did this wonderfully simple experiment. I'll share it with listeners and you as well. But I think it really captured it. He did an experiment where he had people solve the London Times crossword puzzle. And he timed how long this group of people on average were able to solve it on Sunday morning, right after the paper's published. Then he took another group of people. They were not exposed to the crossword puzzle in any way, talked to anyone anyway. And they did it on Monday morning. The people on Monday morning were able to do it a little bit faster. There was a collective experience. We can only assume this is the theory, right? There's some kind of collective experience there. I think in some way that I don't understand, that might have something to do with the decline effect. You know, I mean, the whole, it's all together in a way that we can't pull apart.
Yeah. I mean, I know that, Sheldrake is the one who inspired my metaphysics and medicine. In essence, I'm saying, you know, I want freedom of thought for medicine. And then Sheldrake is saying we need freedom of thought for science, right? And, you know, I'm aware of that whole concept that, like, when to synthesize a substance, a newly created substance, to synthesize it in the lab, the more you do it over time, the easier it's done, even though you don't change the method of doing it, right?
Right.
So, you know, and he says, okay, these are morphic fields becoming amplified, so to speak, and making it happen easier. So there's no doubt there's all kinds of phenomena like that, and that's what science should be open to studying. And I agree with you that even if science opens its mind to everything and wishes to study it, you're not going to find all of your answers by using just a scientific method. There have to be a variety of methods that you can use to learn about these phenomena, not just one particular scientific method or two or three particular scientific methods. You know, you can just learn a lot by an experiential exercise, right? There's all kinds of things that you can do. Going back to that idea of experience that we're talking about, you know, and vaccines and autism. I mean, to me, it's the ultimate mind-boggling denial for a patient, a mother, to walk into a doctor's office and say, my child was normal, my child was vaccinated yesterday, today my child is acting almost like a vegetable, but you tell me that's just an anecdotal piece of evidence that is not proven or corroborated by real science. And to me, that's just their cute little way of denying reality when they don't want to face the truth of the implications of the things that are being done. And vaccines can be very deadly in many cases and can cause all kinds of health problems, not just autism. And I've spent, you know, a career trying to undo some of that damage for many patients who come to see me with their health problems that they tell me originated with that X vaccine X that they took, you know. So that's a reality. There's no doubt about that. And the group think of medicine is so powerful that, you know, you can't change that, and that they're going to find ways to dissemble and to deny and to think themselves out of it. I don't think they are on a collective level purposely denying responsibility. I think they just convinced themselves of that.
Well, see, that's in Larry, and that's why I think the vaccine case is interesting, because I think they did in that case. And the evidence suggests that they did, right?
So, well, on an individual level or certain groups of people, but on the whole big level, all the doctors out there.
But it's a mixture. It's a mixture, right?
Yes.
So,
yes.
Because, you know, the point that you say about the experience of these poor parents, and I'm a parent, and no one knows their kid like a parent. So, you know, you talk about the experience they know. But in this case, it's amplified by the fact that they go and see this gastro specialist, Andrew Wakefield, and he just does good medicine, right? So he starts seeing a bunch of these people, and he starts seeing the pattern like you were talking about. So he says, gee, they're all saying it's tied to this, and they all have this gastro problem that I've seen before. Boom, and he starts investigating. I mean, that's how science is supposed to work. Observe
exactly.
Natural patterns and pursue it further. But what comes out from the CDC is that there was an orchestrated effort to not only suppress that investigation, but to completely turn it around and to send out a scare tactic in the way that Wakefield was treated so that this machine would keep going. And now they will justify it. And the justification for it is, hey, we have to protect the herd, right? We can't let polio get out and start running rampant. So, hey,
that's,
you
know,
that's their logic. So we have to tease that out, too, that there's some folks at some level of control, as is revealed through the CDC, through the whistleblower. We're not making this up, but there's some people at some very high levels who are making those kind of tough decisions, nasty decisions, I don't know, evil decisions, but, you know, that's at play, too.
Absolutely, right. There's no doubt there's a group of people out there who do not want to acknowledge the truth and are trying to find ways to cover it up. And that happens in all kinds of power structures, in structures where there are too much power and not enough accountability and no way to review them or answer to anyone else. And that's what happens. But, you know, on an individual level, we all know otherwise. Many people know otherwise. And the people who are the ones who experience these things are the ones who know for sure. And that's always the bottom line. To me, it's like everybody has no problem with medicine until they have a health problem.
Right,
and then they interact with the system, and then they go, oh, my God, you know, and then they say, oh, my holy moly, what? I didn't realize it was like this. And before that, they had a faith-based belief in the science of medicine without any experience to back it up, right? But when experience and the rubber hits the road, then the reality comes through, and you're forced to rethink all of your basic beliefs. And it makes you re-examine the science of medicine and makes you think differently about these things, you know.
Larry, tell folks a little bit about your website and what they'll find if they go there.
Sure. My website is called spiritsciencehealing.com. And on it are many articles written about the very topics that we've been talking about. Mostly by myself, but also about others. There are also there's also a photo gallery, which, as far as I know, is the largest one of its kind on the web of homeopathic institutions. So there are about 100 different homeopathic hospitals and homeopathic schools and homeopathic persons and homeopathic monuments, and there are images that a lot of which came from postcards. And so it's kind of a nice history of homeopathy in pictures there. And there's a lot of good information about both homeopathy and all the topics that we've been talking about.
Great. Our guest again has been Dr. Larry Malerba. The books you might want to check out, Metaphysics and Medicine and Green Medicine. Larry, it's been great having you on. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, Alex. I appreciate it.
Thanks again to Dr. Malerba for joining me today on Skeptico. I have just one question to tee up from this interview, and it has to do with the shut up and calculate aspect of conventional medicine versus the more holistic approach that Dr. Malerba was talking about, and how both can be successful, but only at the expense of the other. So let me try and pull that apart real quickly if I can, and then hopefully you understand it and we can start a dialogue about it, and maybe you can express some of these ideas better than I can. But if you know anything about the history of quantum physics, you know that these guys, very early on, 100 years ago, reached this kind of dilemma, this breaking point in terms of, hey, we have these quantum effects that we can't deny. They happen. We have the double slit. We have observer effect. We have entanglement. We can see all this stuff in the lab. We know it's happening, but we can't explain it. It doesn't fit within our science, within our Newtonian conventional model. It doesn't fit, but it's very powerful. So the resolution is shut up and calculate. That is, don't worry about the philosophical implications for quantum theory, something we kind of dabble and talk about sometime on this show. Just do the calculations and make good stuff like GPS and all this other fantastic technology that uses the theory of quantum physics but never addresses the philosophical question. So that's the shut up and calculate aspect of it that I think comes into play when we talk about conventional medicine, right? Because there's no denying the tremendous advances that have been made in medicine. The tools we have, the treatments we have are stunning. And when we compare them with 100 years ago or 200 years ago, it's just beyond belief. We have the same nagging philosophical questions that we kind of touched on in this interview. What does it mean to be human? What is really happening with healing? How is consciousness coming into play with all these different treatments we see? And if we're honest and open about really looking at that, we have a lot of questions and we don't have a lot of answers. So let me try and roll that into a question. Is conventional medicine hamstrung by materialistic science? Or does shut up and calculate work just fine and we shouldn't worry about the nagging underlying philosophical questions? So there's the topic for discussion. Love to hear your thoughts on it. I'll throw my own in there and we'll see if we can make any progress. Of course, the place for us to connect on this topic is through the Skeptico website at skeptiko.com. You can jump on over to the forum, leave a comment right there, send me an email, Facebook, whatever you think will work, and I'll do my best to get back to you. So I have a number of interesting shows coming up. They just keep rolling right along, and I have some ideas for some new approaches to handling some of these interviews and along the lines of Skeptico 3.0 we've talked about and tying them into my book, Why Science is Wrong, which I still have to thank everyone for continuing to support the book. You know, I don't care so much about the sales of the book, except that it does help to get the word out and kind of grow and expand this community. It certainly has allowed me to go in some places that have been very interesting for me. So I just want to say I do appreciate your support on the book, and I don't plug the book all the time, but those of you who have bought the book or written a review on the book or mentioned the book is just great. I just can't thank you enough for that. So let me get that out of the way as well. But I do have these shows coming up, and I hope you'll stick with me for all of that. Until next time, take care and bye for now.